You are listening to Larry Connors, USA.
You want answers?
I think I'm entitled.
You want answers?
I want the truth!
You can't handle the truth!
This is Larry Connors, USA. Larry Connors, USA.
Now I'm once again using my presidential authority to activate an additional security assistance to continue to help Ukraine fend off Russia's assault. An additional $800 million in assistance. That brings the total of new U.S. security assistance to Ukraine to $1 billion just this week. These are direct transfers of equipment from our Department of Defense to the Ukrainian military to help them as they fight against this invasion. And I thank the Congress for appropriating these funds.
That is your Commander-in-Chief, Joseph Biden, waxing eloquent, if you will, about the $1 billion he's now sending over to Ukraine. Meanwhile, he's still blaming Putin for inflation here in America, and he's wreaking absolute havoc on oil and gas, refusing to open drilling, refusing to open natural gas opportunities. He likes certain pipelines, just ones not in America. And I had to use a Biden quote instead of Jen Psaki because I'm too tired of listening to her, watching her. Do you know she makes $10 million a year and owns over five luxury cars? Already digressing, though. This is Sarah Moore filling in for Larry Connors today, coming to you live, even though YouTube has attempted to cancel us. Today, there's simply too much to cover, but we're going to dig into everything from inflation and stagflation. Going to revisit a little Larry Summers 201. We're going to talk about Russia and Ukraine, what it looks like to play international chess with good guys and bad guys. We're going to talk about the looming threat of World War III, the viability of that threat. And we would not be having any fun if we didn't revisit once again President Biden's approval ratings. We've got to talk about COVID. Where is it going? Where is it gone? How did it just disappear? We're going to talk about global elites and what they're up to. More than that, we're going to talk about the pitfalls of global moralism. And then we're going to juxtapose that to Ron DeSantis, because we've got to celebrate something hopeful that's going on. What would we do without him? And we're going to talk about the five Chinese spies captured by the DOJ who've been helping the Chinese Communist Party by stalking, harassing, and spying on U.S. residents. Among those arrests include actually a congressional candidate. But we'll also happily highlight how Biden is being far more destructive to the economy than we ever thought possible. And above all else, we'll be taking a clear look about the role that fear plays across our nation and across the globe, and the relationship between fear and manipulation. In every story, in every news clip, it's there. Are you being manipulated? Are you living a life driven by fear? Or do you have the courage to take a step back and look at a story from a separate, a different angle? Because we, as conservatives, we on the right, don't just want to add to the discourse as it currently stands. We don't just want to add to the mess. We want to improve the discourse. We want to improve the world. We want to improve this country. Because we have not given up hope. And we never will. Here's another way to say it. I'm going to be frank with you. There are two types of people in the world. That's right. Only two. There are one, builders. And two, there are destroyers. Well, there's a lot of destruction going on right now. There's a lot of fear-mongering. And you have a choice. I have a choice. We all have a choice, no matter what side you claim to be on, whether we are going to be builders or destroyers. We have an extraordinary and exceptional country. The livelihood, the well-being that it has provided to so many millions of people should never be taken for granted. But we're going to disclose those that do. Those that hate her, hate this wonderful country. And then we're going to talk about those that still propose it is the best experiment, the best democratic experiment that has ever been run in the history of this world. That is something special. Now, right now, we have over 700 civilians that have been killed in Ukraine since Russia invaded Ukraine on February 24th. And that's what we're going to call it, the Russian invasion, not the war between Ukraine and Russia, but the invasion into Ukraine. The United Nations says that number is much higher. There's a high likelihood of that. But Ukraine has also had some visitors over the past few days from the UN, visitors all over the globe, who want to get a firsthand account of what's really going on over there. We're going to bring that information to you. And in the meantime, we're also going to cover what to do about the gas situation. Oh, my word. In California, it's already up to $7. Keep an eye out. Keep an ear up. We're bringing the real story, the real news to you. Thank you so much for joining us. And don't go away. Here on The Larry Connors Show, I'm Sarah Moore.
You can hear podcasts of this program at Larry Connors USA Facebook. Larry Connors USA Facebook.
For years, I've told you, be well with Wellington. Wellington Environmental. That's because I know the excellent work Wellington does when it comes to making your home, your business, even hospitals safe. See, recently I asked Wellington to check a relative's home. The relative had been constantly sick. Doctors couldn't find a cause. I asked Tom Wellington, please check the house. After extensive testing, Wellington could rule out mold and other air and water toxins. Well, that was a major relief, and the negative results gave doctors added information. So when I encourage you to call Wellington, I mean it. Wellington, 314-644-4930. 644-4930. A-rated by the Better Business Bureau, Missouri and Illinois. Wellington Environmental, 314-644-4930. Be well with Wellington. Wellington Environmental. I want you to know something special. John Beal Roofing constantly gives back to the community in so many ways, supporting more charities and good causes than any other local roofing company. Why? It's the right thing to do. Keep that in mind when you need a new roof, plus quality work at the lowest price, guaranteed. John Beal, 1-800-NEW-ROOF, 1-800-NEW-ROOF. Larry Connors USA.
Larry Connors USA.
Mr. President, what will it take for you to send the Polish pigs that President Zelensky is asking for?
I'm not going to comment on that right now. I'm not going to comment any other than what I told you. Thank you.
Well, Mr. President,
that's right. Again, your commander-in-chief, unwilling to comment after dropping a bomb of an announcement, another $800 million to be sent to Ukraine. That makes $1 billion total being sent over. But he's unwilling to dialogue with reporters and journalists because it would, should he actually open his mouth and speak from his mind, disrupt the conversation that his cabinet is trying to control, the dialogue his cabinet is trying to control. Now, let's take a step back and look at the timeline for Russia and the relationship between that and fossil fuels in America. Because Biden is currently making the case that the 8% inflation problem and the $110 oil problem and the $4.33 gasoline problem are all the fault of Putin. There are some moments, yes, even Biden does have his moments. He finally did call Putin a war criminal, but then he rescinded that accidentally, and then he said, wait, never mind, he is a war criminal. So just shoot us straight, please, President Biden. Tell us what you really think, not what you're supposed to be scripting or not. So here we go. Essentially, if Congress goes along, America will boot Russia out of the World Trade Organization and impose high tariffs on Russian imports. That's what he said, hopefully. And that's great. But then Biden again, continues in the wrong direction when he's making the case that all these inflation problems are caused by Putin. Remember how difficult it was to buy Christmas presents for the kids because of inflation? Yeah, the Ukrainian invasion had not yet occurred. But Biden goes on saying that from the time of Mr. Putin's troop buildup on the Ukrainian border in January, the price of gas went up 75 cents. Well, here's the real data for you so that you can be informed and you can make the right decision about how to respond. In January 2021, gasoline was $2.35. In October of 2021, gasoline was $3.31. In November, which is actually when the Russian troops were first amassing on the Ukrainian border, gasoline was $3.41. So here we go. You've got the picture. Biden is flailing at diplomacy efforts. Putin senses his weakness. Gas prices fall a little bit, actually lower than in November, and here starts the Russian buildup. And then, in March 11th, it hits $4.33. So the moral of the story is this, says Larry Kudlow. Gasoline popped about 75 cents between February and mid-March as the invasion unfolded. But before that, gasoline prices went up about a dollar over a year, or a 40% gain. I'm going to say that again, a 40% gain. So guess what? Do the math. Between January 2021 and February 2022, oil prices went up $39 from $91 to $52. That's a 75% gain. Now, I can speak to this from personal experience after attempting a spring break last week and driving down with five kids, my husband, in a minivan through about five different states as we made our way to Florida. It was outrageous to see in a single day the volatility of the gas prices from station to station. I know you feel that pain too. I know there are trade-offs. I know that getting to the grocery store and shopping is becoming increasingly more difficult. But do we hear the administration empathizing with the average American? And I'm talking about upper middle class. This is not, you know, the most underprivileged in our country. It's outrageous that he won't open up drilling in America. You know why they don't want to drill in Anwar up in Alaska? The single most important reason why environmentalists make the case not to drill in Anwar is because of the porcupine caribou herds. So they are choosing the porcupine caribou herds to protect them over protecting their own citizens of the United States of America. So the economic situation in the U.S. is stark. I don't have to tell you that. I also don't want to participate in the fear-mongering myself. I want to encourage you to be hopeful, but to prepare. And at the same time, I'd ask that you consider the timeline for Ukraine and how ironic it may seem that Biden halted oil and gas leases amid this legal fight on climate cost stuff on February 22, 2022. That special day was 2 days before Putin invaded Russia. Do you think there's any correlation between those two major decisions? So the Biden administration is delaying decisions on new oil and gas drilling on federal land and other energy-related actions after a federal court blocked the way officials were calculating real-world costs of climate change. Biden won't budge to help the American people because of climate change. It all goes back to climate change and the globalist green agenda to protect certain herds, for example, over human beings. So here we go. A brief filed by the Justice Department late Saturday confirmed that certain activities associated with fossil fuel leasing and permitting programs are impacted by the February 11th injunction. Delays are expected in permitting and leasing for the oil and gas programs. No joke. It's a travesty because President Biden on his first day in office restored the climate cost estimate to about $51 per ton of carbon dioxide emissions after Trump, President Donald Trump, had reduced that number to $7 or less per ton. So Trump's estimate included only damages felt in the U.S. versus the global harm previously caused by President Barack Obama. Blah, blah, blah. Why am I blabbing about all these details? Why do I care about what the Energy Department or the EPA is doing? Well, because we're being choked economically as a country. And because the revolting nature of these poor policies are going to hurt, first, the poor more than anyone else. People are already feeling the pain from this economic situation because Biden, as a puppet, will not budge on these climate policies. The climate, the green energy agenda is the new civil religion of our time. It's absolutely frightening. And, you know, if you want to think about what's going on here, think about what's going on in Ukraine. There have been reports that government elitists, even over there in Ukraine, have hoarded the wealth at the top, and that even though the grocery stores are full of inventory, that the people of Ukraine cannot afford those groceries, the ones that remain standing, of course. And think about this. Think about the dire situation Ukrainians are in, far worse than what we see in America, economically speaking. Think about what's happening to Russians. There's a temptation to oversimplify and think that Putin equals Russia, that that's absolute. When the truth of the matter is, there are so many Russians that are actually ready and willing to oppose Putin, like the protester we saw just a couple days ago hopping on state news. Well, we haven't heard from that protester since then. We've also heard reports of those that have opposed Putin vocally ending up dead in suitcases. So we know how that regime operates. We know that Putin only informed a select few of oligarchs and his internal close-knit webbed power structures before this crazy act of war. But at least Biden's calling him a war criminal. I will give Biden that. But that's all I'll give him. Mark, could we go ahead and play that clip from the old journalist who spent over three decades in Russia covering what has happened over the past few years more recently, but also what happened in that important year of 91?
Russia's under sanctions. These sanctions aim to bring Putin down, or at least halt his invasion and war in Ukraine. They're going to affect the Russian population. The Russian population, many of them, don't support Putin and don't support the war, but they're going to suffer the economic consequences.
There you have it. That particular journalist was covering Russia for CNN for so many years, and he himself had to flee because of how Putin treats free speech, or lack thereof, I should say. But let it be a lesson to all of us that when free speech is threatened in one place, it is threatened everywhere. To tolerate that kind of behavior, which is what we have been doing to Russia for decades now, as it poisons its own activists and protesters that oppose Putin or the Kremlin in any sort of way. I think in particular, there are movements in America to support Ukraine in certain ways, but to actually boycott Russian culture across the board. And I want to ask the question, does that actually help Ukraine? Cutting ties with artists and writers. There's a great article in the review of the Wall Street Journal last weekend. But what does it look like for us to not compound the dehumanization that is happening to people all over the globe and to actually be an advocate for free speech, no matter what knowledge we don't have access to about the inner workings of Putin's regime? Well, there was a Russian soprano who was actually canceled at her engagements at the Metropolitan Opera here in America. And I just press pause on that and ask us to think, is that the right way that we should be responding? Is that the right way that we should be supporting? There are victims in Russia, just like there are victims in America, just like there are victims in Ukraine. Now, I'm not comparing the suffering to a T. What I'm saying that across the board, we cannot lose our ground when it comes to defending free speech. Think of Voltaire, his Candide, written many, many years ago. But that piece of political satire, it is often the artist that is the most rebellious to a tyrant. I heard a quote one time, this famous quote. Unfortunately, I can't remember who it's by. But in order to take down an authoritarian regime or a dictator, who do you want? The poet. So, all that to say, don't give in to these random social justice fundraising schemes unless you know where the money is going. Don't get caught up in the social justice of picking winners and losers when we don't know what's actually going on the ground. And let's go back to Nick Robertson and hear one last quote from him before we move on.
Fast forward a decade, Putin comes to power. All those changes, all that alignment towards a European-style democracy and integrating with the rest of the world, he said that was wrong. And he's reversed it, tried to reverse that position ever since with his different invasions and now in Ukraine. And that, I think, you know, tells you, because of his complete power there, it tells you that, Russia is, at the moment, Putin. And it's Putin that is trying to drag his country back to some imagined former glory. And that, at the moment, is to the detriment of the vast majority of Russians.
That is actually putting it lightly, I think. But, at the same time, it helps us to ask the right question, which is, which narrative are we going to believe? The one that Putin is trying to write? The one that Zelensky is trying to write? The one that Biden is trying to write? Where do we go and who do we trust? And I would encourage you not to believe everything that you see on the major media outlets. Why? Well, because whenever we have the left and the right and that major media monopoly that we've talked about here in time past, when they are on the same page and pitching the same message at the same time, when they are not reporting casualties but using lots of adjectives about how devastating things are or they aren't, when they are always selling alarmism, we have to be careful not to buy into their narratives, because that narrative will then control our own lives. In order to stand up to the truth, we have to be courageous in our investigation and our relentlessness. I'm Sarah Moore on The Larry Conner Show. Stay tuned. We're going to talk about China next.
USA.
Larry Conner's USA.
This is Sarah Moore, and I'm filling in for Larry Conner today. We certainly miss him, though. Larry, hope you're doing well. Hope you're having fun. I promised you that we would revisit the timeline, the Ukrainian timeline, the series of events, and that's exactly what we're going to do. But we're going to dial it back to February 4th, only a few weeks before Putin would invade Ukraine. Here at the Winter Olympics in Beijing, there's a picture of Putin sitting with his eyes closed as the Ukrainian team entered. I wonder what was going through his head at that time. What thoughts? I would kill to know. Actually, no, I wouldn't kill to know, because then I would be like Putin, who is a war criminal. By the end of the month, he's going to invade Ukraine. He already knows it, and he's already been talking to people about it, because the Olympics was not the thing that Putin was in Beijing for. He had a high-profile meeting with Chinese leader Xi Jinping, in which the two pledged friendship and solidarity. Their vision, their shared vision of what their partnership could achieve, ended up in a crazy, expansive, and scary manifesto. So this future world that they sought, you hear everyone talking about the world order being shaken up. Well, China's probably thinking twice about that conversation that I'm sure was not just one conversation, but the culmination of many conversations, just by virtue of the fact of how the first few days of Putin's invasion went. Because, you see, the tactics that he attempted to employ were actually that of, yes, old Russian military tactics, but also, in particular, the German Blitzkrieg technique of warfare. That's right, I said it, Blitzkrieg. And in particular, Putin was trying to deploy this series of waves so that as soon as he sent destruction through with bombing, he would soon have troops following up. Well, because of how poorly structured the Russian military was, they poked holes in Ukraine like a piece of Swiss cheese. That's exactly what his military strategy was, one of Swiss cheese. And so he ended up, because of poor resources and reinforcement and planning, actually cutting off the supply lines for his own troops. Now, I digress a little bit, but don't you think that China and all of its leadership would have been paying attention to the efficacy of Putin's delivering on what he said he would do in Ukraine? I think so, and I think China's getting nervous. So if you actually zoom forward a couple days to the gathering of the UN General Assembly, that emergency session and debate, because they wanted to collectively condemn the invasion. The breakdown of the vote is really fascinating. It was a 141-5 vote, with Moscow joined only by Belarus, Eritrea, North Korea, and Syria. Those countries, North Korea and Syria, good guys or bad guys right now? Well, I know it's a blanket statement to say it that way. I think my actual conviction is not to talk that way. But at the end of the day, what comes out? What are the true byproducts of authoritarian regimes and greediness? Well, poor leadership and poor partnerships. And I think that's what China has found itself in. So this quasi-ally position, China actually abstained on the vote. And which is really, really fascinating. There's been a more recent interview with the CIA director on Tuesday, where he believes that Chinese leadership is feeling unsettled, is the word that he used. They did not anticipate the significant difficulties the Russians were going to run into. Nearly 2 weeks into the invasion, Russian forces are bogged down in Ukraine. They're stuck too, suffering as many as 4,000 fatalities. That's right, 4,000 fatalities, according to the Pentagon's estimate. And encountering unexpectedly strong resistance from Ukrainian forces. You've heard the stories of the smaller missiles and bombs that Ukrainians have been able to use that have been very destructive to the Russian military. Now, meanwhile, Beijing has kept its mouth closed. It's refused to condemn the invasion by its partner and said Monday that their friendship, his friendship with Putin, remains rock solid despite international condemnation of Moscow. Because remember, there's one thing that greedy authoritarians want more than the survival and thriving of their own power. These two, Putin and China, hate the West. That is what they have in common. That is what fuels them. That is what they're all about.
You can email Larry at LarryConnorsUSA@gmail.com. LarryConnorsUSA@gmail.com.
Ackerman Toyota believes when you need service, you want genuine parts, certified mechanics, no hidden cost. You get all of that with Ackerman Toyota. Plus, if you're ready for a new car or pre-owned, see what Ackerman has on the lot or what's coming. Ackerman Toyota, Hampton and Interstate 44. Ackerman Toyota for life.
This is Larry Connors USA.
Larry Connors USA.
That's right. We're on Larry Connors Show. This is Sarah Moore coming to you live. We're so grateful you're listening in today. And we've got a special guest on the phone with us. Because as you know, as all this craziness is going on globally, secretly, it would seem, because none of the major media outlets have reported on it, violence has erupted at the U.S.-Mexican border in a town close to an American consulate, was attacked by gunfire in a brutal cartel fight the other evening. We have with us Mark Morgan, former acting U.S. Customs and Border Protection, that's CBP commissioner, and Heritage Visiting Fellow. Mark, thank you so much for joining us today. How are you?
Sarah, first of all, I'm doing well. Thank you for having me.
Yeah, absolutely. It's a pleasure to have you with us. Could you give us a breakdown of, you know, the recent report that has been released and how the and highlighting how the Biden administration has actually turned the United States into a sanctuary country, plain and simple?
Yeah.
What's
yeah,
going on?
First of all, Sarah, I think that's exactly right. I think that's a correct, you know, phrase, terminology. Look, there's two things going on simultaneously by this administration, and it's by design and it's intentional. Some folks have said, hey, they don't know what they're doing. They're new. All that is just not true. They know what they're doing. This is by intent. This is by design. And the two things are happening. First of all, we've opened up our borders, especially our southwest border. They're wide open. We've handed them over to the cartels. We have really turned our southwest border into a welcoming center. But that's just half of it. The other half is what's happening in the interior. As you articulately put it, this administration has created really a sanctuary country in this entire nation. And here's why I can say that confidently is the ICE recently, just in the past couple of days, released a report that showed where they're at. And this is important to put. So in, in context, when we're having the highest numbers of illegal immigration in our nation's history and the border is out of control, this administration has enacted policies that has resulted in the lowest number of ICE detainees in more than two decades, the lowest levels of deportations in the history of ICE, and a significant decrease of arrests of illegal aliens in the country. So that's why this is clearly an intentional design to create a sanctuary country in this nation.
Right. And with everything else going on with inflation, with, it seems like, you know, a new crisis du jour, how does that flooding of numbers of people at the border into our country at a time like this affect America's short-term economic future? How do you see that panning out?
Well, so that's another great question is too. And that's why we say, first and foremost, this is about border security, of which illegal immigration is just a subset of the vast threats that we face from outside our borders. But it's also very important when we say illegal immigration is not a victimless crime. First of all, let's just take jobs themselves, right? When we have a historic level of illegal immigration, again, 2.1 million encounters. We haven't even talked about the 600,000 gotaways that broke into our country in the last 12 months and evaded apprehension, which is, by the way, the same size as an entire state of Vermont.
Wow.
So we don't talk about that enough. But what happens is we have U.S. workers that are marginalized. As we bring in illegal aliens who work here illegally, they're paid at a lower wage. And so not only displacing already marginalized workforce, but then, you know, the irony here for this administration is you continue the exploitation of the migrants themselves. And then the reality of the 800,000 that they've released and the other 600,000 that have broken in the last 12 months, 1.1 million, the facts are the overwhelming majority of them, look, they don't have skills, they don't speak the language, and they end up on some sort of welfare or assistance immediately, and they stay on for a considerable time at taxpayers' expense.
How much of this effort, for lack of a better word, how much of this effort by the Biden administration do you think has to do with them seeking political gain coming the next election cycle here in November?
Yeah, I think that's the question. And what I would say, it's not just a perceived political benefit from the upcoming election. It's really what I call the perpetual political benefit.
Mm-hmm.
And look, I've been serving this country, Sarah, for 35 years, six administrations, both Republican and Democrat. And I can say that hands down, that 35 years, I've never seen an administration that is their policies are driven by their politics and ideology greater than this administration. And there's two perceived political benefits. One, illegal aliens, as we all know, are actually included in part of the census.
Mm-hmm.
So the more illegal aliens have here, they have a chance of redistributing House seats. The second perceived political benefit, they believe that every single illegal alien they find a pathway to citizenship is going to equate to a Democratic vote. So we are talking about politics and ideology rather than what's in the best interest of this country, and it's disgusting.
Right, and that's fascinating given the role that redistricting has already played in an election year like this one. To imagine it kind of being on steroids even more is completely frightening because of the way that it just shakes up the political map. You know, every few years, it's crazy. So I'm really curious. You said you've never seen an administration driven so ideologically. Why do you think they're so effective? Why do you think we allow them to be so effective? Why do you think this hasn't been done before? Not that I'm condoning it. It's awful.
Right. Well, so what I think that's a very good question. There's a couple of things. But one is look, we have to be honest here. The Republicans are part of the challenge here.
Mm.
And I go back. Let's go back real quick to the Trump administration. The first 2 years of the Trump administration, Sarah, the Republicans had the White House, the House, and the Senate. Yet they still, for 2 years, failed to pass a single piece of meaningful legislation mm-hmm. that would reduce 75% of the horrific open border policies we're seeing right now. And the last thing I'll say is that we don't just have political appointees in this administration. We have more ideologues than I've ever seen in any administration. At the top of the list is Secretary Mayorkas of DHS.
Mm-hmm.
But rather than being a secretary responsible for protecting our homeland, he's acting more as a social activist, and he's only concerned about his only personal ideology. And you can see that with his actions and his statements. And let me get just real quick a couple of statements. He said that being here in our country illegally is not enough to be removed. Having a court order of removal from a lawful immigration judge is not enough by itself to remove you. He's defying the law, he's creating new law, and it's based on ideology, not what is in the best interest of securing our country.
All right. Speaking of security, it's not like our criminal justice system is a healthy one right now. It feels exactly. like we're beyond capacity already. And I just can't imagine, I can't conjure up or think of a more harmful way to not support the American citizens, to not support legal immigration. And to that end, where do we go from here? What can be done proactively, policy-wise,
yep.
but also strategically? What can we do to move to a better place?
Yeah, so one thing I think that your listeners and all Americans, that you've got to get educated. I know lives are busy. Mm-hmm, I got it. Mm-hmm, you're trying mm-hmm. to put food on the table. You got a job paying your mortgage. I got it. But just take a few minutes. Get educated and understand this is about border security first and foremost. You can't separate border security from illegal immigration. Look, when you mm-hmm. have 2.1 million encounters, the cartels are using, they're actually using the immigrants to pull border patrol agents off the line to provide the humanitarian care. That leaves large areas of the border wide open. And what's happened? We're having gang members pouring in. We're having criminal aliens pouring in. And we're having drugs pouring into this country. And that doesn't stay on the southwest border, Sarah. It makes it to every town, city, and state in this country. We had 100,000 drug overdoses in a 12-month period. And the overwhelming majority of drugs came from our open southwest border. How can that not be an American thing? How is this a right or left thing? How is it we're not 100% all of us behind securing our border to stop the destructive, dangerous drugs from pouring in? Oh, by the way, right now the leading killer among adults from 18 to 45 is fentanyl.
That's
where
right.
does the overwhelming
right.
majority of the fentanyl come? The southwest border. Why, Sarah, we're not 100% all in agreement to shut our border down, secure our border, to prevent Americans from dying every day escapes me. That's what we need to focus on.
So does it come down to simply winning a presidential again?
So I think that is the question, because what I've said, look, the election's at the end of this year in November. It matters. It does. It, mm-hmm. it does. And you know, if the Republicans take back the House and people actually understand border security, they can do a lot through appropriations. But as long as we still have an opposing party in the White House that doesn't believe in border security and doesn't understand border security, there's only so much they can do. So it's about the elections in November. It's about the elections in 2024. But it's also about what your listeners can do right now. Get to your state AGs. Get to your state governors. Demand that they step up and fill the gap left by this administration not upholding the constitutional duty to protect this country. Do more like AG Paxton of Texas and
That's
Governor
right.
Abbott of Texas is doing. Those two men are absolutely leading the charge to secure our borders to do what this government's not doing.
That's right. Mark, wish we had more time with you. Thank you so much for joining us. Everyone, stay tuned and go check out Mark Morgan on Heritage's website. Thank you so much, Mark.
You bet, sir. Thank you. Bye.
Yes. God bless. Wow. Talk about frightening scenario upon frightening scenario. But that's not the end. That's the good news. There's always hope.
You can connect with Larry on Twitter at LarryConnorsUSA.
If you want to impress someone, I personally recommend Cafe Napoli, Clayton, our town and country, or St. Charles. Cafe Napoli offers private rooms for up to 50 guests. So plan a corporate party, an anniversary party, a birthday party, a party party. Cafe Napoli has a location near you, Clayton, Town and Country, and St. Charles, where Cafe Napoli 3 is now serving lunch or Sunday brunch, only at Cafe Napoli 3 in St. Charles.
Never would have hitchhiked to Birmingham if it hadn't been for love. Never would have called the train to Louisiana if it hadn't been for love. Never would have run through the blinding rain without $1 to my name if it hadn't been for love. Never would have seen the trouble that I'm in if it hadn't been.
This is Larry Connors USA.
Larry Connors USA.
Welcome back to the Larry Connors Show. Sarah Moore once again filling in. Last time I had the chance to be on the show, you and I had the opportunity to talk about the president's approval ratings, how they were dropping. This was right around Afghanistan and that whole debacle. That's a poor descriptor, that disaster. And right before Glenn Youngkin won the election in Virginia. Now, we talked about his low approval ratings, but there's something happening right now going on where we're seeing a little tiny spike in President Biden's approval rating for his handling of Russia and Ukraine, believe it or not. Now, I know that's not how you feel about this, but there's something called a war bump. When a country first handles crisis or interacts with war, when war strikes, people are optimistic because they want to have hope in whomever holds that office of leadership. Well, right now, President Biden's approval rating for his handling of the Russia invasion of Ukraine has risen 5 percentage points since the start of the war in Eastern Europe. More than 2 weeks ago. This is according to a new Yahoo News YouGov poll. It also includes a 12-point gain. That's right, 12 points among self-described independent voters. I find that really interesting. But at the same time, we've got spiraling gas prices, remote peace prospects, and rampant U.S. partnership. All these things, these pieces, make Biden's hope, because as you heard in the earlier segment, it's all political. He hopes for a political turnaround before November. Not even just that, he hopes for a political turnaround indefinitely. The survey includes 1,623 U.S. adults, and it was conducted from March 10th to 14th. If you like to nerd out on those numbers like I do, go check it out at Yahoo News. But there's also Rasmussen Reports offers a daily presidential tracking poll, and I think it's the only one of its kind now that Gallup has left the field. Rasmussen Reports is the only national recognized public opinion firm that still tracks Biden's job on the daily. Here, as of Wednesday, yesterday, it shows that a 42% likely U.S. voters actually approve of President Biden's job performance, and 57% disapprove, but that is a 2% increase for Biden. Stay tuned to those numbers, because those numbers will show you what the administration is doing directly related to the policy crisis of the day, of the week, to gear up for November elections. Because they don't underestimate the down ballot effect, these local, statewide, and U.S. Senate races, and how even a gubernatorial race is affected by a presidential's approval ratings. More on that later. In summary, before we tune out for the next segment, we want to sit back and analyze, because we've listened to what a lot of other folks are saying about what's happening in the world, their opinions on how we should view Zelensky, how we should view Biden, how we should view Putin. But this is the case. Because we're asking the question, how do we make sense of this? What do we actually believe? What can we trust? Because what if it is a feckless Biden that was the catalyst telling Zelensky that he would get him into NATO? What if Putin went ballistic when he heard that news? What if Lindsey Graham, is saying something we should listen to? Did you see, by the way, that Elon Musk challenged Putin to a deal, a duel? I'm surprised Putin even has a Twitter account when he hates West and Western things so much, but that's neither here nor there. Putin needs to be taken out. He is a genocidal maniac, but a well-protected one. And the woke CIA could probably do it, but not with Biden calling the shots, says one listener. Putin is a wild card. That's what I believe. Biden is feckless. That's what I believe. But the seriousness of nuclear threats cannot be taken lightly. The Russian economy has the GDP of Spain, and the sanctions will start to hurt so badly that in the end, Biden will probably wilt even still with more KGB-type threats. He has surrounded himself with woke people on all sides, woke military folks as well. NATO has a decision to make. Will they be a toothless tiger, or will they be strong? Will they halt genocide, or will they sit back and watch? Be careful where we listen to what is shared on major media outlets, because there's propaganda on all sides. The task for us is not to be woke and not to fall in the wokeism ideology, but instead to awaken and to call a spade, because this tale abroad is not a story of good versus evil. It's evil everywhere.
This is Larry Connors USA.
Larry Connors USA.